For many, if not most of us, superheroes played a significant role in our childhoods. It was Adam West's TV portrayal of Batman that I remember from my elementary school years. Since then, superheroes, comic books, and an almost endless stream of superhero films have played a significant role in pop culture, not just for kids, but for adults as well. Because we've been made to love stories, we're drawn into the tales of these mythical characters. Why is that? And how can we leverage these cultural artifacts in our ministries with kids? Today, we have fun with the lively and winsome trio from the Thanos to Theos podcast as we talk about superheroes, comic books, movies, theology, and our kids on this episode of Youth Culture Matters.
From the Center for Parent Youth Understanding, this is Youth Culture Matters. If you're a parent, youth worker, educator, counselor, grandparent, or anyone else who cares about kids, we're glad you've joined us for this practical, informative, and hope-filled podcast. This is a place where together we talk and think Christianly about the rapidly changing world of today's children, teens, and young adults.
Well, welcome everybody to another episode of Youth Culture Matters. I'm here in our divided studio now, thanks to COVID. Chris Wagner threw me out of the back studio, so we are in separate rooms. And Jason, our co-host, is joining us from Spokane. And Jason, what's that?
That's good to be here.
Yeah,
it's 2021.
Yeah.
We haven't done a podcast together yet.
Right, we have not recorded yet in 2021. So this is great. What will this year hold? But we're going to start it off with a topic that I know very little about, and Jason, you're actually a part of this world, which explains a lot about you, right? I mean, what I see behind you. Now, where were you going with that in your head? I'm talking about what's on your wall behind you, what I see there, all the comic book covers.
Well, I was just thinking if it's a topic you don't know anything about, Walt, it could be anything.
Yeah, that's true. That actually is very true. But this one, I'm gonna learn a lot, and we're going to have some fun with this. But we're going to talk. Jason, why don't you talk about what it is we're going to hit on today?
Well, we're going to dive into conversation around comics, characters in comics. We're going to talk about superheroes. I mean, can't get any better of a podcast episode than this. So we've got three heroes in the genre. They have their own podcast. And so we're going to dive into the conversation around theology and superheroes.
Yeah. So here's what we want to do, right? So you said we've got these three superheroes here, which I know these guys, and this is going to be a lot of fun. But they have a podcast that's centered around comics and comic culture and superheroes and theology. And I'm going to let them tell you a little bit about it. And rather than call on one of you, let me just say it this way. I'll ask the one of you that's the alpha dog in this crew, would you speak up and just talk about, tell us about your podcast? Okay. I was throwing you a line here because
I'm gonna say that's Kevin, because Clark and I talk the most, and then Kevin comes in with these wisdom bombs. And it's like, okay, yeah, we should just let Kevin go first.
I actually hoped that this would spark a fight, because this was me throwing, I was throwing something in there to just see how you guys would respond. I don't know who the alpha dog is.
Everything sparks a fight among us.
Oh, it's Kevin. True. Kevin's
it's
talking.
True. Every episode.
Yeah.
I'm always in the middle of that fight.
See, this
well,
is...
Well,
I
really villain.
Have a hard time picturing that.
If you agree with me, we wouldn't have any problems.
Yeah, and here we go. So like, let's get... Kevin, why don't you tell us about the podcast, and then tell us about these guys.
Yeah, so we host a podcast called Thanos to Theos on the Rooted Podcast Network.
You just said it wrong.
Yeah, man, that's not our agreed upon.
We had a whole episode about how to pronounce the name, and you're already saying it wrong.
Thanos.
That's what I said.
You said Thanos.
You said Thanos. You've been working on your Greek Thanos. Papers too much.
The non-MCU accurate way.
Sorry. I'm still in seminary, guys.
They can't agree on the title of their podcast.
Yeah, I'm still in seminary, so sorry, guys. I am getting mixed up on all this stuff. Anyway, so, we started this podcast. Actually, you know, Mike was the genesis for this, I think.
Yes, he was.
He thought it would be, he loves comic books. And we've had multiple conversations about the Marvel movies, comic books as a whole, how we grew up reading all our comic books and stuff. And he thought it'd be awesome to find the intersection between comic books, youth ministry, pop culture. And so we are on opposite sides of the country. I'm from Los Angeles. Clark is from San Francisco. And Mike is from Boston. And so we've been doing this podcast together now since the pandemic began, actually. This was one of our pandemic projects.
Okay. All you guys have been involved in youth ministry for some time. You've all been students. You are students. And this is sort of a side hobby, or maybe a life-consuming, all-consuming hobby. I know there's a lot of passion already. I mean, you guys can't even decide who's the boss. I love this. This is good. Yeah.
Tony Danza.
Yeah. So, and by the way, I'm going to let everybody know that we say this all the time, but anything these guys mention today or we mention in terms of resources, including their podcast, where we'll include links to that if you go to cpyu.org and look for the player for this particular episode of Youth Culture Matters, you'll be able to scroll down and Chris Wagner will put all the links there, including the link to their podcast and a pronunciation guide, by the way, so you're able to say it correctly.
So, does that mean we're also going to include comic books? Like comic books?
That would be a very long list. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to do that, that's going to be a lot of work for
Chris.
Yeah,
well, I've watched Chris. I have watched Chris do this over the years, and he does spend a lot of time on it. So this could be a record setter. This could be a record setter. So let me ask this question, right? I'm fairly ignorant on this, but I have done some research over the course of the last 24 hours just to learn a little bit more about you guys. And just to be honest, it's quite frightening what I'm learning about you just from your interest in comics, because I've gotten some of that. But, you know, so a lot of people who are into comics, I mean, the most basic argument would it be Marvel versus DC? Is that the most basic argument that people have? Is that where it all starts? Okay. And my understanding is that...
That's the comic version of Arminian versus Calvinist.
Okay, there's the theology, and that's about as deep as we'll probably get today. But Kevin, Clark, and Mike, you guys do agree you're all Marvel guys, right? Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Yep.
That is correct, plus Batman.
Yeah, okay, plus Batman, all right.
I'm throwing that in there right now.
All right, okay, I know we're going to hear more about that. And this is a little sampling of what you'll hear when these guys are arguing with each other on their podcast. Jason, you are you a DC guy? Like, behind you on the wall there, what are those?
It's a mix of Marvel and DC. And so for our listeners, just so you know, I do have a number of comics from my collection that hang on my wall in my office at home. But yeah, I'm split, but I also wonder real quick, because I think this is a generational love. Like, I think this there is a split, because I think my generation and older might say DC. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that many of you are late 20s, early 30s. Is that a good estimate?
I'm 40.
40, okay. So you're just a few years younger than me. Kevin, Clark?
Yeah,
I'm 33.
Okay, all right. Well, let me ask this: I want to know when you say Marvel, DC, because I think that there are people in my generation a little bit older that might be a little bit split. But as you get older, it's DC, because I grew up with nothing but DC. Marvel really didn't come on the scene until the late '60s, and then you see a difference in the way the characters are developed. So I'm just curious.
Are you like 70 then? Like I don't understand.
Yeah, I might be.
Yeah, he grew up in the 30s.
I sit in the middle with 40. Regards to Marvel and DC. Like, we're the split. But I want to hear you guys talk about why Marvel. Why is Marvel your jam?
And if you would, by the way, I'll just throw this in. If you could comment on Archie Comics as well.
So I actually grew up reading Archie Comics. I did.
What's that?
I enjoyed them. But, when I was a child, I spoke like a child and I thought like a child. And then I put childish things behind me and grew up to mature comics.
Okay. Yeah. Hey, look, I moved on from those. Chick Publications were...
The Chick Tracks.
Yeah, the Chick Tracks were, you know, something else. I wouldn't purchase them, but I'd pick them up every now and then, you know, like in a restroom at a stadium or something like that.
Wherever they would show up.
Yeah. But go ahead and answer Jason's question there.
We did a whole podcast on this, right? An episode where we talked about this.
I think so.
And
it's hard to remember.
And.
Well, I mean, I remember what we were talking about was, for us at least, why are the Marvel characters more compelling? And it really came down to like the type of hero you see in the Marvel world versus the DC world. Because in the DC world, other than Batman, they're all basically gods. They're untouchable. They're indestructible. They're alien in some way. So I think that's part of the reason why everyone loves Batman, because he's so relatable as a character. But then in Marvel, when Stan Lee started, you know, really ramping it up, he wanted something that was relatable. That's why the very first family in comics was a Fantastic Four. It was a family relationship that people could relate to. And he kind of just ran with that. And he constantly was trying to create these characters that both evolved with and touched the, you know, the language and the heart of the times. So even like Black Panther in the 70s, he made these characters in a way that they were supposed to be relatable. And so I think for us, generally, that's what we would say. That's why we veer towards Marvel, is there's more relatability. So there's also more depth and intrigue behind the characters than, at least for me personally, that I see in DC. Like, I think we were just talking about the Wonder Woman movie last time we recorded a podcast, and like, it was a great movie, but then the last 10 minutes, it just goes off the rails because she's fighting this other god, and it's just like, what is happening? This is not the Wonder Woman that we related to throughout the rest of the movie, and now in the end, it's just like, you know, all hats are off. They're just gods at war with each other.
Mm. Do you guys think that DC is really just trying to revamp itself based upon what, like, I think of Superman, Man of Steel, and this is the most recent incarnation, and I think you're right with Wonder Woman, but I think of like Man of Steel, and Superman is not made to be as flawless as he is in the comics. Like, right. There is this dynamic of where they're trying to place him, they're trying to play upon his human nature, not his super nature, or whatever that might, divine nature you might say, or whatever. Do you feel like DC is just really kind of trying to mimic what Marvel has done, or the success that they've found with the character development?
I think they're just trying to make money.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem. No, seriously though.
Like, I agree.
I think they're just trying to make money instead of creating art. And so they're throwing as much, you know, social issue into their movies and scripts as they can to get people to come and buy the movie, watch the movie, whatever, instead of really telling a compelling story. And I think that's why the first Wonder Woman movie was so fantastic, because it was story driven and it was character driven. And then the more recent one was more issue driven. And yeah, I think they're just more about the money than about actually creating art right now.
So in that sense, I think that's why the movies haven't been as successful, because I don't think they're true to the characters that we know and love. Like with DC, I want to see the idealization play out really well. So like when you see the first Wonder Woman movie, I mean, what made it so great was the sort of purity and her innocence.
Yeah.
And I think the moment that the movie tries to take that and go in a cynical direction, I think that's where it kind of loses everybody. And so I think that's where it's falling down.
Well, and there's like this fantasy aspect to DC versus Marvel, where it's relatable because it's
right.
Like real cities, you know,
right.
Like
New York, West Coast.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. It's not Metropolis, you know, mm-hmm. It's not Gotham. And you can, in some ways, Gotham, you can kind of relate in a particular way. Metropolis, you know, New York City, whatever. But it gets a little bit confusing. And so you're trying to blend these different realities. And it feels like Marvel, if I'm correct, always tries to use landscape geography that people can relate to. Is that, would that also be something else that adds to its ability to have success?
I think so, because totally. You can look at the comics and the movies that Marvel does, and you can see yourself in them.
Right, right. Like, I even think about Miles Morales. He's like, he's you know, swinging around the Bronx and checking out different places that are landmarks in the Bronx that people know of, like shops or restaurants that kids can say, like, hey, I know that place, like, or that's just like the market down the street from me with the same type of guy who runs it.
So explain who Miles Morales is for our listeners, because they may not understand.
And for me. And for me.
And to help Walt.
Yeah.
Maybe Mike should, since you actually read that series. I'm still early on.
Well, yeah, but we've all seen Into the Spider-Verse.
And we've seen Into the Spider-Verse. And, yeah.
It's fantastic.
And I'll admit, I played the PS4 game of Miles, so.
Yeah, yeah. So Miles Morales is a teenage boy from the Bronx, African-American guy who gets bitten? He gets bit by the same radioactive spider from the Spider-Man story, or slightly different. But so basically he becomes the new Spider-Man. And initially people were all sorts of ticked that, you know, they basically just recreated Spider-Man but made him black, yeah, and thought that it was just this kind of social justice type of thing. But he's actually a different, he is a genuinely different character. He's not just a black Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And the stories that he brings to the character from a different perspective and kind of a slightly different set of powers and different people who he fights and everything is really, really compelling.
Really great story. So,
I'm pretty stoked for him to enter the MCU, hopefully.
So I have a question for you guys. Wait, what's the MCU? I know what
the
it
Marvel
is.
Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Okay, all right. Gotcha. Just if you're using acronyms, help us out here. But so here's a question for you guys. Obviously, you are deeply immersed in this. You have tremendous knowledge. I'm a little worried you know more about this than you do about theology. However,
it may seem that way if you listen to one of our episodes.
Yeah. But so you're all working with students. You've all worked with students. Are you finding that you have students who are as into this as you are? And would it just be maybe a coincidence that these kids are in your ministry? Or do you find that kids are actually drawn to you because you have this interest in this growing, you know, bank of knowledge about this world?
Well,
go ahead, Kevin.
Well, I was going to say that I think there's a divide between comic book readers and comic book viewers.
Movie watchers, yeah.
Yeah. So I think the comic book movies have really brought all of these stories into the mainstream. And it's almost like in our public consciousness, those are the sort of canonical character versions versus those of us who have been reading comics for a while. That's still a little bit not as popular. I'm not going to use the word that Walt wants me to use, but I'm going to say it's a little less popular. But I'd say among students, I mean, because the Marvel movies have been such huge touchstones in our culture, it's definitely helped me bridge the gap with many, many of my students.
Yeah, and I want to be sure I hear, but Clark, were you going to say something to that? Or
yeah, I was going to say almost the same thing, but I've most recently worked with mainly older students, so like 18 to 25 year olds. And same thing that Kevin said, they're really into the movies, but to be as into the comics as we are is still not quite cool. Like, we had another episode about this on nerd versus geek culture and how nerd culture is becoming pop culture. Nerd culture is kind of taking over. So like nerd culture being things like, you know, whether it's Japanese anime and cartoons, things like Pokemon, One Piece, to comic book movies. But the geek culture is still a little, you know, under the wrap, subterranean, so to speak. And we talked about this because Mike was totally fine watching a midnight showing of Endgame by himself in the theaters, but ashamed to walk into his local comic book shop. So there's still this taboo around us geeks versus the popular nerds.
I don't think that episode's actually
released yet, but we did record it. Yeah.
That's not good. Well, yeah, I'll say I relate to that. Mike, I relate to that. Like, yeah. I can understand, like, is this, like, dynamic of I'll go to a movie by myself, watch Endgame. Absolutely. I'll watch it three times by myself. I don't care. It's, but, like, walking into the comic book store, yes, it's nostalgic for me. Like, I have so many great memories.
Yep. Brings me back to childhood.
Yes. Yeah. But there is a dynamic of when I'm in the mall and I walk in there and there's no one else in there except for me. And then there's a bunch of tables for, like, Dungeons and Dragons and other stuff that they're playing in the back. I'm like,
Magic card.
What am I dipping into? And
You know,
I know we need to go to break.
No,
before we do,
not yet. I got a couple things I need to ask about before we go to break, because I'll forget.
Well,
but go ahead, Jason.
Because this helps move the conversation forward and will frame some of the conversation that we have later. But we haven't discussed favorite character, character in the MCU and the Marvel universe. And DC, like I know Batman was mentioned, but I would just like to know each of your favorites.
Hey, let's do that when we let's hold that, because I think I know who the favorites are, except in your case because you're all over the place. But I think I know who the favorites are, and I actually prepared some trivia questions for these guys based on their favorite characters. So watch Kevin run onto you know, like Wikipedia right now to get himself ready for this, but. No, let me just say this fascination with just the differentiation between the terms geek and nerd. And I'm thinking back, you know, like, so I'm in college and someone's using the term geek, right? And by the way, just so you're all certain, it wasn't a reference to me. But at that point in time, you know, you're wondering do you know what a geek originally was? Anybody know?
I don't.
None of you guys know.
We weren't there when the word was put into the lexicon.
80 years ago.
Yeah.
When it was spoken.
Yeah. Well, Kevin, you're a great example of what a geek is. But let me just say, this is what so it was when I was trying to figure out, like, what is a geek? And supposedly it's a guy who bit the heads off of chickens in a circus.
What?
Yeah, you guys see, you're throwing this around. And I remember this. My mother was hearing.
So, really, a geek is Ozzy Osbourne.
Right?
That wasn't chickens. That was a bat, correct? So,
it was a bat, but I think he has to. I don't know.
Chris, you may want to.
Bat.
Chris, please fact check this, all right? Right now while you're sitting here. But this is a conversation at my house growing up because, you know, okay, three boys. And we're all like three years apart. I'm the oldest. So my youngest brother is 6 years younger. I can still remember this. He's walking through the kitchen, and he had been using the word geek, or someone had used the word geek, and my mother turned to him and said, you know, what's a geek? And without even taking a breath, he goes, oh, that's easy. It's the same thing as a twit. And just kept walking, which wasn't really helpful to my mother, but that was about as far as, you know, we went with this back then. So it's really fascinating to me to even hear how these terms have evolved over the years and taken on more of a, because you guys would see that as in this world of all this as kind of a positive label. Is that accurate too?
I don't know if it's a positive label, but it's a label.
Okay.
It's an acceptable label. It's not an insult so much anymore.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
For the most part. I mean, if you say it a certain way, it's obviously an insult.
Okay.
But I think it's kind of just like, yeah, I'm a geek.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you know, that's just what I do, what I am. And I think it's the same as like cosplay is a acceptable normal thing, even though it's still kind of weird.
Yeah.
But like it's not this niche culture that's super out there anymore.
Yeah, it's mainstream.
It's
now.
Just an acceptable branch of, you know, culture and what people do.
Yeah, it's not a derogative term that would spark a fight on the playground. Okay. So before we go to break, I just have a couple. You guys are Marvel guys. Jason, you can weigh on this as well, but I have just a few questions for you, and I want to see who can answer these. So here's the first one, and just, you know, speak up if you think you have the answer. Marvel Comics owned the rights to what word from 1975 until 1996? Does anybody know? Oh man, this is great. I'm going to give you four options here, all right? Multiple choice. I was going to let you go if anybody knew about it. Okay, mutant?
Mutant.
Panther, zombie, or laser?
Yeah.
I say mutants.
Mutant.
Yeah, mutants.
No.
Yeah.
It was zombie. They owned the rights to Zombie from 1975 until 1996.
Marvel Zombies.
After publishing Tales of the Zombie in 1973.
Wow. Marvel Zombies.
Yeah, yeah. I actually knew that before I asked it of you, and you guys revealed you didn't know that, so I hope you're impressed. But I've only known it for 24 hours because I went searching for it.
So all right, here's another one. By you all.
Here's another one. What was unique about the title of the comic book? What was unique about New X-Men issue number 118? New X-Men issue number 118. Oh, crickets! This is great. All right.
Is that Phoenix Rising? Is that Jane?
Jean Grey?
That I can't answer, but this is interesting because we're gonna talk about this a little bit later in terms.
Where Black Panther debuted?
No. Oh. No. Let me tell you what it is. This is kind of like the youth pastor, the culture watcher in me. I found this question and thought it was fascinating. The word sex was concealed in the illustrations at least 18 times, almost one on every page. And the reason was the illustrator, Ethan Van Sciver, did it because he said Marvel was annoying him at the time and thought it would be fun to inject a little mischief into his work.
Wow.
Yeah. See, I really thought you guys would know all this stuff. All right. One more before we take a break. And this one bleeds into my world, okay? What British band's co-founder and singer worked for Marvel between 1975 and 1977? Do you guys know this? This is horrifying to me that I've asked three questions, and you. All right, so well, here's this.
This is before our time.
Wait, no, ask something from before the 70s.
Well, no, I thought you'd know. So, okay, go ahead.
Well, let me. So he say the question one more time. I want to make a guess.
What British band's co-founder and singer worked for Marvel between 1975 and 1977? All right, I'm going to tell you because
is it the Who? Stones,
do you know who Neil Tennant is from the Pet Shop Boys? He was. Did you know this? Yep. Did you guys know this? I mean, there's fascinating stuff about Marvel. He was an editor with Marvel and working over there, and he was anglicizing the American spellings in the comic books for the British versions, and he was also tasked with the job of indicating when the superheroines were too scantily clad. And they needed to be redrawn to be dressed more decently for the audience there. So just some fascinating stuff. So, all right, when we come back, I'm going to ask you some questions that I think you might be able to answer, and we'll continue our conversation. Stay with us. Youth workers, are you looking for ways to continue your ministry to parents during these difficult days where parent ministry is more necessary than ever before? Would you like to bring CPYU to your church in spite of COVID-induced limitations on travel and gatherings? I would love to come to your church in a personal, live, real-time virtual format. We are now offering several different one-hour seminar options, including Q&A, that you can now book at a time that is most convenient for you and your parent group. Participants can join as they gather in one place together or from their own homes. You can learn more about these seminar options by visiting our website at cpyu.org and clicking on the link for the Virtual Parent Seminars. We have a limited number of dates still available during 2020 and through the spring of 2021. Remember, to learn more and to book a CPYU Virtual Parent Seminar, go to cpyu.org. So, you know, I mean, it's obvious for people who are listening right now that my knowledge on this stuff just is nothing compared to what you guys have. And if people had been able to experience what Chris and I just experienced during the break, that would be driven home even further because Kevin, Mike, Clark, and Jason were just, I guess I can say, geeking out over this stuff and getting so excited. I almost felt like I was trying to fall asleep as the youth worker in a middle school boys' cabin, and the guys were just going laughing and going at it and talking over each other. It was awesome. I mean, it really is. It's really neat to see you guys into this, and because I respect you all so highly, and I do, with what you're doing respectively
you respect
in ministry,
middle school boys.
Yeah, no, higher than that. I have high respect for all people, but anyway, so I thought to myself, you know, the best I can do, I can't really like contribute to this conversation. It's so frustrating to me because I know so little, but it's fun to listen to you. But I can give you all superhero names. So I've come up with some names for all of you based on what I know from you. And I have learned, like, the way to name a superhero, a lot of that depends on sort of the end of the name. I guess we would call that like a suffix, right? So you end the name with an O or an O-R or a man. You put man at the end. Ulees, you know, U-L-E-S. ISIS, or I-C-U-S, or Ator, you know, A-T-O-R. Am I getting this right, Mike? You're laughing at me like I'm out of my mind. So here we go. Here's what I have, all right? So I'm going to start with Clark. Clark's a guy that I know the least among you. I've spent the least amount of time with him, but I have listened to him on your podcast. So I'm just going to pull out one of my impressions of him. I'm going to call him Smarticus. That's his superhero name is Smarticus.
Right? I love that.
Well, right.
By the way, I don't want you. Yes. What'd you say?
PBS special.
That's right. Yeah, like you, like
yeah,
they
like
would
a
do
special song.
Right.
Smarticus.
Right. But no. That's like that's juvenile. Yeah, no.
Thank you, Walt. Thank you, Jason.
I'm thinking more.
Clark, you now have a new name.
Smarticus.
And a theme song.
Yeah. Yep. No. Don't go with Jason's theme song because I'm thinking. You know, you are. Smarticus
like
is a
that
noble
works.
superhero, so if you're going to go to PBS, it's Masterpiece Theater. So there's going to be some good stuff there. All right. Who do we want to go with next? Kevin, you have like the shortest last name of anybody I know. Yee. So I just thought like I just wanted to add a suffix to it. So you are Yeor. That is your superhero name, which, by the way, could serve you well with in
my
children's ministry.
Winnie the Pooh.
That's right, because it'll serve you not only with students as a superhero, but if you want to get into children's ministry, there's the it's not Eeyore, it's Yeor, but kids will hear it as that. All right, so Chris, I gave you one. I thought this because your last name's Wagner, you are Wagnito. I just think that's
nice.
Like that just
that's
is
good.
Strength
nice.
And you know all of that. So Jason, I like the man, you know, like Superman, Spider-Man, Iron Man. You yeah. are because you're a Cubs fan, you are Bartman. You are Bartman.
It's like the Ooh. Like isn't that a compliment.
But that's who you are. You're the, evil,
reality
you're the evil villain of
the
baseball.
Of
that's
fandom
right.
Around
right.
The world.
Right. Yeah.
You definitely have to be a super villain.
Yeah.
If you're
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So and Mike,
like the hero's about to save the day.
Right.
And then you swoop in and
yeah.
make his
yeah.
like
Bartman.
Your favorite team wants to go to the World Series.
Yeah.
No, Bartman steps in.
So let's move to Mike. In keeping with the sports theme, Mike, I just thought this. You are the deflator. The deflator.
it's
by the way,
that
who's your?
Everyone knows that he is a Patriots fan.
Oh, he's rabid. He's a rabid. So the deflator, and he has nothing to say. He's just sitting there staring off in silence because he has no answer.
There's so many things I want to say.
Yeah,
but...
yeah. Well, don't say yeah. them. Right, and we're
yeah,
recording
it's
this.
It's better for me to keep my thoughts yeah. to myself right now.
Right, right. So, yeah. All right, Jason, we're turning it over to you. You wanted to know
okay.
about everybody's favorite.
Yeah, well, let's do that. I know you have a question, Walt, for each one. So maybe Kevin, let's start with you. Let's hear what your favorite character is, because this will come up as we start exploring this further with other questions that we have. So real quick, favorite character, Kevin.
All right. So I'm gonna just generalize and go with my guy Thor. I didn't read so much of his comics growing up, but the MCU really challenged and changed my perspective. And yeah, I love Thor. I love the fish out of water story that he was a part of in the first movie. In the second movie, you had more of a sort of Shakespearean family.
Yeah,
drama.
It was so good. Dark World. Oh, it's amazing.
You know what? Let's not rehash this, but I will say Endgame has redeemed all of the Thor stuff. And remember, he's the only MCU character that's getting a fourth movie, so that proves he's the best.
Because he's the only one that's still alive.
It's objective. Yeah, because he's the best. He survived everything, guys. Like,
real quick. So in the MCU, he had the arc with, getting a little bit larger. And many people had an issue with that. Did you like that?
No, I thought that was fine. I mean, I understand why people had objections to the body shaming aspects of that whole story. in terms of the vulnerability that it brought to the character. And you know what? When he kind of cleaned himself up at the end, when he lightning changed himself, it's not like he slimmed out. So
yeah, which I appreciate.
Yeah, I totally appreciated that. So
all right, well, you got a question.
Hold on, let me get my head to stop spinning here. All right, here we go. Kevin, you're gonna do okay with this. I got a multiple choice for you, okay? So let me ask a question and give you the possible answers, because I realize now open-ended questions don't work with you guys with my trivia. So I've got to go to the multiple choice, give you a shot, right? At least make a guess.
Nice.
All right.
Yes.
So here's my Thor question. Who is Thor's half-brother? Is it Hercules, Popsicles, Balder, or downright bald?
Isn't it Hercules?
Kevin.
Am I wrong?
It's Balder. Mike's shaking his head. Mike, did you know that?
I knew that.
Okay, all right. I'm going to let Mike and Clark and Jason, if somebody gets it wrong, you guys can just
steal the answer and go after him.
I thought, wow.
All right.
We need to pause to pray for him right now. Kevin.
Okay, so Mike, favorite character?
Spider-Man, absolutely.
I got a Spider-Man question.
He's amazing. See what I did there? Here's the thing about Spider-Man is he gets beat down constantly, but he always finds a way at the last minute to win. And so he's always the underdog. And he puts himself at risk to protect the other common people who aren't fighting in the fight, to protect them, because he's your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Okay.
Well, he's the ultimate sidekick.
Okay, so
he is the perfect sidekick.
Well, and you know, so this little question I have for you, Mike, will mesh with that nicely, because this is about a supervillain in the world of Spider-Man, and specifically Rhino. All right, do you know who we're talking about here?
I do.
Okay, good. All right. So this is going to be multiple choice. Bear with me with my pronunciation difficulties here, but I'm going to work through this with you, all right? So I'm going to ask you the question. I've got four options. So the question is, what is Rhino's secret identity? And the options are, this is the first one, A, Dmitry Anatoly Nikolayevich. Did I do okay there? All right. Second, Alexei Sisevich. C, Carpathia Propagandovich. And D, Wilhelm Belichekov.
Well, I really like option D.
Now, we're talking super villains here, so.
Can you... I think it's the Alexei.
You are correct. Alexei
B.
Sisevich B. That's correct. Good job. I'm impressed. Mike takes the lead.
All right. Yay. There we go. Excellent. Yeah. All right, Clark.
Race of the Geeks.
All right. Well, my favorite always as a kid growing up was it was not a hero. He was more of a sidekick as well, but it was War Machine. I love the Iron Man comics and cartoons when I was a kid, and War Machine being his like trusted and true number two. I love that he was like this Air Force captain general, and also flew into arms with Tony. So I love that whole friendship that he had with Tony, but also as a kid, I just love that he had the coolest guns all over his back and shoulders. So he was my favorite.
Gotcha. So he was number two to Iron Man.
He's Iron Man's trusted sidekick.
Well, it's a shame I don't have a question prepared about him, but let's go to number one, Iron Man.
That's fine.
Can I ask
you
a question
fine.
About Iron Man? Okay.
We'll see how I do.
Okay. Well, let me just ask this. This is not the question I have. Somebody mentioned it already, Iron Man's real name.
Tony Stark.
That's correct. But do you know his full real name?
Oh, like Anthony.
You're onto it.
I think it's a D.
Yeah, Anthony Edward Stark. But that's Edward. All right. That's all right. So here we go. When did Iron Man first make his appearance in Marvel Comics? Four options here. A, 1963. Okay. B, 1968. C, 1974, and D, 1988.
Oh, gosh. I'm bad with dates. I know it was Tales of Suspense, but I don't know what issue it was.
That is impressive.
I'm going to say it's 1964.
Oh, you're so close. It's 1963. 68? But 63, but you got Tales of Suspense correct. Tales of Suspense number 39. And that was his first appearance as a character. He received his own title in Iron Man number 1 in May 1968. So you threw a lot of dates in there that were really good. That's excellent. All right, good. So we got those three guys. Jason. Working on the assumption, I have trivia on both Daredevil and Mike Cerrone's evaluation of who was your favorite, Green Lantern.
So when I was younger, it was Green Lantern, but yeah, Daredevil.
All right, let's go with Daredevil.
My adolescent. Daredevil was the thing that I loved most.
Okay, so last time we talked, you did mention Green Lantern at some point in our conversation.
Yeah, I did.
I'm not
I
pulling said, up from no, nowhere.
Yeah, when I was younger, when I first started collecting comics, Green Lantern was the go-to. But as I discovered, I discovered Daredevil when I was like 11 or 12, and I just fell in love with him because it was right when I was starting to, it's when I became a believer. It's when I started engaging in my faith, and Daredevil was one of the first comics that I read where the character actually was always wrestling with their faith. So yeah. I appreciated it.
And he's basically the Marvel's Batman.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
He's more of a Batman than Batman is.
That's right.
Oh,
echolocation and all that.
I've heard this conversation before. All right. Daredevil trivia. Yeah. All right. It's multiple choice here. Four possibilities. Okay. Which of Daredevil's love interests suffers from dissociative identity disorder? A, Typhoid Mary Walker. B, Claire Temple. C, Electra Nachos. D, Bella Grande Nachos.
Okay, so the question, they suffer from what?
Dissociative identity disorder.
I think it's typhoid.
Typhoid Mary Walker. What?
Yeah.
What kind of things do you like? I mean, I was reading about this villainous. It is deep and dark.
It's creepy. It is.
It's creepy.
It is.
Hey, the world is a scary place sometimes.
By the way, I saw her picture too. And that was, I don't know if I'm even going to be able to sleep tonight after seeing that. But okay, yeah. Well, let's talk. Oh, hey, let's shift gears.
Daredevil technically, he never saw her, so it's not a problem for him.
True. Okay. But in fact,
it depends on how we define sight.
Chris, are you picking up on the fact that there's not a question we can ask or a name we can mention with these guys not going off down rabbit trails of like.
and not only rabbit trails of disagreement.
Oh, yeah, yeah, oh, yeah, they're all over the field. This is
our bread and butter.
So let's shift gears here, because I really want to talk about, you know, for those of us who are not a part of this world in the way that you guys are, you know, those of us who haven't been sucked into this endless vortex that you guys are in.
It really is a vortex.
Yeah, but no, seriously, I want to ask about, you know, how helpful is it, or how helpful has it been to you to be a part of this, and to be able to connect with students at a deeper level who have an interest with this, or B, I'd love to hear about this too. How can we utilize our knowledge of these stories and these stories themselves in ways that allow us to perhaps illustrate the truths of the gospel, you know, any way at all, maybe that you've been able to use these in youth ministry?
Yeah, well, let me jump in first then. I think one of the things that you all and CPYU does so well is focusing on cultural exegesis. And I've used your 3D guide for media discernment so many times in ministry, and discover, discern, decide, and asking those questions, which really are the basic hermeneutical questions that we ask when we look at scripture, right? What does it mean? You know, what's the message? And now what do we do with it? And bringing that to the world of comics to culturally exegete what's happening in the world of comics. And one of the things that I am routinely noticing, which matches up with what we see going on in our culture, is that we villainize our heroes, right? And we make our villains sympathetic. And I think one of the main ways where I see this is in the DC movies, especially with how they make Superman all like dark and grim and brooding. And, you know, like in the comics, Superman is supposed to be like so godlike, like just like absolutely perfect Boy Scout figure who no one can stop, and he always does the right thing. And then in the movies, they make him, you know, like dark, brooding, and then they focus on the collateral damage and the people who he hurts when he saves the world from destruction. But my aunt, you know, got killed by the rubble that fell from that building, so now I hate him, or whatever. And then we make the Joker this sympathetic figure who is like a hero for people who are struggling with, you know, depression and anxiety and mental health situations. And we make the Joker lovable. And that's just what we see going on in our world around us. So I find comics to be an easy way to have that conversation with students. So they say, oh yeah, we do that, don't we? And then we can talk about, you know, our perfect Christ. And so, you know, that's one way that I like to use comics and ministry and conversations.
Can I follow up on that? And anybody can answer this, but you raised an issue there, Mike, where, you know, so when I watched, you know, I watched Superman when I was a kid, and it was Superman from TV 20 years before, I guess, it was made, you know, Clark Kent, Lois Lane, and I can't remember who played Superman, but what you're saying resonates with me about who he was, squeaky clean and perfect. Problems are solved very quickly. Nothing is ever left untied when an episode is over. The good guy always wins. The good guy never commits any sort of immoral or indecent act. You know, there's no dark side to the good guy. And, you know, so as I've tracked with television over the years, what I hear you describing in this world that you guys are tracking with, you know, I think we just had this conversation this week. I think back to the television show Mad Men, and, you know, people say, I'm not going to watch that because there's depictions of immorality. But the immorality is not glorified. It's quite a view into the human condition and the spiraling down of the human condition, which is actually, you know, a theological truth in so many ways, especially as you read Romans. And more recently, this is where we had the conversation this week, we've been watching Poldark, which is a show about, you know, the late 1700s, post-Revolutionary War, and this British war hero. And the same thing, we're seeing that same thing there, where there's darkness, but the consequences of that come through. Are you finding that in the world of that you guys are in here with this, that those dark parts are being glorified, or are you walking away? Are kids able to walk away with lessons that, to be blunt, sin has consequences, immorality has consequences, or is that more glorified?
I think we can see that in comics. Guys, do you want to speak to where maybe some examples you can think of?
I mean, I definitely feel like there is this maybe normifying, if I can use that as a word, but making more normative the personal issues, and because where our culture is at is so much of moving away from any sort of moral authority other than the self, right? And so that's something I think we talked about with the Joker movie. It was definitely like this making normative his experience and almost like rationalizing it and making it even okay. While at the same time, you see also especially in the Marvel comics and movies now, like there is still this internal struggle of the hero of needing to do what's quote unquote right, which is the greater good of the populace or the civilian. So I feel like there's still this tension where comics, at least, they're playing off of the way this culture is going with, you know, making normative our own inner sins and struggles, while at the same time realizing, like, to be a hero, there's a sense of sacrifice that has to happen for the greater good of someone else. And so they're not losing that. So that's something that I see more, I guess, on the, when you see it in the movies, that I think, and if I can even just speak to answer the first question too, that I think can be used to maybe combat some of this normative realization of sin, to realize, like, hey, the hero always has to make some sort of sacrifice, which helps us realize and understand that we can't just do what we want. And I think, you know, Mike made this good observation in that episode we had on the Joker, that the villain's always the one that just pursues what they want. The one who pursues their ultimate goal without ramifications is always a villain. It's the hero who sacrifices him or herself for someone else's good.
So let me just dive into this even further. And maybe, Kevin, I know that we've even talked about this on breaks in other episodes or whatnot, but there is this, because you're talking about the character development of both the superhero and the villain, which I think really helps. I also just think the overarching story, the arc of the story that happens around the superhero and the villain is incredibly important. And I saw that between Infinity War and Endgame in the MCU, right? There was so much that was going on and so much was happening, and hope was lost and then hope was regained, essentially. And I'm just curious how those can be tools for continued conversation of the gospel. How could a youth worker take and apply what they're seeing on screen or what they read in a comic? Screen probably being the thing being more applicable, because students are more engaging that than they are in the comic book. What would be some practical tips that you would give to a youth worker that is engaging in this and they want to go further theologically and build it into the conversations they're having in their youth ministry?
Yeah, I think definitely the way that comic book movies have kind of pervaded youth culture makes them easy to pick up as parables. What's really interesting about youth culture is we have so much choice now. So if you want to talk about a specific song, for example, it's much harder to be able to have a song example that everyone's heard before or everyone's familiar with. But the Marvel movies are huge. I mean, everybody knows something about the way these storylines have kind of followed through, right? Everyone knew the ending of Infinity War, even if you didn't watch it, because it was so shocking and it was something that everybody talked about. Endgame was the biggest movie ever. And I think that makes it easy for us to utilize and pick up these stories and draw parallels from the Bible, knowing that it's going to be a pretty common experience that a lot of the students have watched or been involved with.
Kevin, you just mentioned something that I don't think I've ever pieced together, and it would be great for us to go a little bit further, because you have the Beatles in the 60s that crossed so many genres, right? It really is one of the last bands that was as popular as could ever happen again, because genre is very clear. You mentioned it with music. Like you have a youth group of 50 kids, and it's not going to be, it's going to be very rare that you have a song that all of your 50 students know. But you're actually saying it's not unlikely, though, that all 50 students have heard about or have watched Endgame. And so there's a power in that, because just going even back to what Mike was mentioning about the 3Ds, there is actually a resource that is available in these stories that allow for us to be able to use it as a teaching tool, even more accessible than music and other elements of pop culture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love that they're complex enough, these storylines, to, I think, provide us with a huge variety of illustrations and examples.
Yeah. So, I mean, you even think about the main storyline in Endgame and Infinity War, and have a debate with students, was Thanos right? You know, when he snaps half of life out of existence in the entire universe, because he thinks that's better for population control and for human flourishing and for life, and it's better quality of life for everyone else if half of everyone dies. So he just does it because no one else has the courage to do it. And there were people all over the place making the argument that Thanos was right. And I think that's a very theological, philosophical conversation that you could have with students at that point in time.
Yeah. And I would also add to that, like, what I mean, because like you were saying, Jason, if let's say the superhero movies are the new cross-genre medium, I would just, and this is something that I think about when I think about my own consumption of comics and enjoyment of them, is what makes them so compelling that anyone can watch them and relate? And one of the thoughts that I've had, and this is something I've related to in my ministry to students, is I think we all love watching them because we love this idea of someone who's our hero, who can like fight our battles, who we can look to, or we want to be the hero ourselves. And it brings me all the way back to that first Avengers movie, where Loki's like big thing that he was harping on was, human beings, you crave to be ruled. Well, if you were to think in the moment, you know, our culture right now would say, no, we love autonomy. We want freedom. But really, if you were to dive deep and ask the internal heart question, do I really want full autonomy? And do I want to have to fight all my battles myself? No one provides for me. Like, I don't think we'd want that. That'd be like another show I watched, The Walking Dead, where it's every man for him or herself. And so I think we do want rulership. We want, the thing is, we just want someone that's good. And that's something that I think the superhero genre plays with, is you have all these heroes that have their humanity that either taint their superhero, you know, character or what they're doing, that really can, I think, play into this longing of humanity that we have, where we long for a hero and we keep looking at other human beings to be that person, but in all their imperfections, they won't fill that void that we have.
Have any of you guys done like a viewing party with a group of students in a room? You watch the movie together and then you ask certain questions of it. Have you done that?
I've gone to the movie theaters with students. So as the movies have come out, you know, you take a group of students and then you have dinner and you talk about the movies and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are fun.
Yeah, that would be, it would be fascinating to know, you know, obviously Mike mentioned the, you know, the 3D guide. But even beyond that, that's something that we have here, you know, where we talk to kids about discover, discern, decide. And it's really about digging into the worldviews that are presented in there and how does that measure up against the truths of God's word in a biblical worldview. But I wonder if anywhere there's a, boy, and if we can find it, we'll post it. But any sort of movie discussion guide that would be really helpful to get at the root of some of this and offer opportunities for youth workers to have sort of a ready-made list of questions that they can ask to process these things. Have any of you, one more question before we take a break, have any of you ever used a film, because I've done this with music a lot, as a diagnostic tool with a student? In other words, you watch the film and you ask them, you know, is there anything in there that you identify with? Do you see yourself there? And allow the film to speak for a student about things that the student might not, prior to that, be able to really express about themselves and some of the issues that they're facing in their lives. Have you experienced that?
I think I haven't experienced that personally, but I think that's something that has, that this whole new, I guess the wave of recreating a diversity of heroes has allowed a bit more, especially with this team, like the Champions or the Young Avengers, who are all basically teenagers. They're a diverse group of kids. I've heard people say, I've not used this myself, but I've heard people say, like, I can so much relate to someone like Silk, Cindy Moon, because she's a Korean-American teenage girl growing up with the pressures of immigrant parents. And yet now she has this superhero side of her. So I think that does allow a bit more of that these days, with especially Gen Z being so diverse as a generation now, where there's this variety of even cultural narratives that students can relate with and relate to as they're processing these stories and ingesting them.
Hmm. That's good. That's good. Well, we need to take a break real quickly here. Stick with us. We'll be back and we'll finish up our conversation with these guys. Tens of thousands of kids have been trained by their parents and youth workers to think Christianly about music and media with our How to Use Your Head to Guard Your Heart 3D Guide to Making Wise Media Choices. This easy-to-use teaching tool needs to be in your youth ministry toolbox if you desire to teach your students to integrate their faith into all of life. Jesus calls us to follow Him, and that includes following Him into the 6 to 9 hours a day of screen time that shape and mold the beliefs and behaviors of our kids. To learn more about our 3D Media Evaluation Guide and to order a copy for every member of your youth group, go to our website at cpyu.org. Teach your kids to engage with media to the glory of God. So one of the things that we say here all the time at CPYU when we train youth workers, we train parents in how to understand culture and how to exegete culture is we talk about the fact that culture serves as both a map and a mirror. It is both reflective and directive. So when we look at culture, we can begin to understand what some of the worldview undercurrents are, what's happening in the culture, you know, where is the culture moving? And certainly with art and film, you know, that stuff leads us, all right? So what it does is it reflects back to us where our kids are, where they're in terms of getting ideas and elements of their worldview, shaping how they think which ultimately works itself out in behaviors. And the other thing is it's not just a mirror, it's a map as well. You know, our kids are looking to develop an identity. Two of the main tasks of adolescent development are identity formation, you know, finding an answer to the question, who am I? And then worldview formation, what do I believe? So there's this double-sided part of culture, and it's fascinating, as I've been listening to you guys talk, to hear this come out in a variety of ways. And right before we took the break, Jason was thinking and responding to Clark on some things he had said. So do you want to pick up on that, Jason? Because I'd love to hear us talk some more about that reflective, directive, map, and mirror.
Yeah, and I think that's really important, and I appreciate you bringing it up, Walt, because I think one of the things that I hear us talking about and the thing that I'm watching with comics is that it really is operating more than ever before as a map and a mirror. And I know that earlier we were talking about comics and the difference between nerd and geek and MCU and just the Marvel Universe or DC. But the thing that I am finding is that there is this loop that's kind of occurring where a lot of youth may not be reading comics, but comics are more popular than ever before. And what I mean by that is the storylines are being reported on, being discussed in pop culture and in the news, even though people might not be reading those storylines. So for instance, because I want us to discuss about a couple of very intriguing things that I'm finding, especially as we talk about this narrative. The first is, I think there's some really great things that are occurring, right? We talked about Miles Morales and representation of a superhero beyond Black Panther who is Black, who is a African-American and is in New York City and just talking about the experiences of what that means. We see Miss Marvel, right? I believe it's a female Pakistani, which is also really, really important. And then we also see Thor, right? Like there is representation in Thor for a female lead character, powerful, mighty. I mean, there's so many different dynamics that we see of some of this diversity that's beginning to occur. The other thing that I'm watching in the midst of this is, and I dive into this work all the time around sexuality, is I'm also seeing characters that have both that are new and those that have been in the storyline in the MC and DC in the Marvel and DC universe for a long period of time take on different aspects to their sexuality that they never have before. So for instance, Star-Lord is the most popular, most recent, where the character is now bisexual. And Star-Lord, you would remember, is the lead character in Guardians of the Galaxy. If you've watched the MCU, Chris Pratt plays that character. We've seen this now also happen with other characters, which are kind of fleeting from me at the moment. But I do know Star-Lord would be the most prominent, but I know that Star-Lord is not the only. So
there's Iceman, too, from the X-Men.
Iceman. Yeah. Yep. So can you pick up on what we're supposed to do with some of this narrative that, you know, we've talked about the superhero and the villain, but what about the narrative that really has a great deal of influence, especially in this day and age right now, as we're talking about sex, sexuality, gender?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has so much to do with what's normative. And to see, comics have always been about seeing myself on the page as someone who's heroic. And, you know, with Iceman, with Star-Lord, and now, I don't think it's a spoiler alert, right? But in the WandaVision show, she and Vision just had these twin babies. And in the comics, they're known, one of them is Wiccan, and one of them is known as Speed. And Wiccan is gay. And there's rumors that another character who's going to be revealed in the next few episodes of WandaVision is the comic character of Hulking, who is Wiccan's boyfriend. And they're both members of the Young Avengers. And so this is probably a storyline that's going to be front and center in the next few chapters of the MCU as it begins to unfold, because it has to do with representation, right? And so we just need to be prepared to have those conversations, and we need to be prepared to see that, right? So how do we respond?
Yeah, so that'd be a great question. I mean, how would you, I mean, you're the experts with comics, and you're in many ways diving into theology, right? Theologians. And so I'm just curious how we take what we're seeing there, or maybe help some of our listeners take the next step and then apply it to the conversation.
Well, Kevin's writing a seminary paper about this, so I'm just going to put
say
you
it
on,
the, I love on the spot.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say it's really interesting because, you know, traditionally pop culture has been for the last, I don't know, decade and a half, especially anything aimed towards kids and teenagers, has been relatively safe from sort of the gender and sexuality conversation, particularly Disney as a company, right? Like they have hinted at certain things here and there, and it's always been major news when a character in a Disney movie is going to be have some sort of other type of sexual
orientation. Like Ocean's Trading Post and Frozen.
Yeah, exactly. And there's always been hints that, you know, there have been seeds placed in some of the past movies. People kind of go back and have this revisionist history idea. But the Marvel movies, you know, for the most part, the last decade and a half, like they've been relatively avoiding that conversation, but they have to reckon with it now because it's so much a part of our culture. So in that sense, you have the comic books definitely being a reflection, not so much a map, because they need to kind of follow the culture with this regard. They're not necessarily leading. And I don't think that they've ever been leading in that regard, which says something, right, about where we are. But I think that it underlines absolutely that as youth workers, we need to be prepared to have these conversations on a personal level. We need the counseling piece. We also need to learn how to teach about these things in a way that Gen Z will receive. Because I think a lot of the ways in which we talk about this automatically turn a lot of kids off. Because again, this is so normative in our culture.
Hey, Kevin, you know, you something you said there just about, you know, the reflection piece of it, you know, but think about, I want your thoughts on this, because I would push back a little bit and want to hear how you respond to this. But think about the kids who are getting into this at younger and younger ages without anyone to really help them, you know, process what they're reading, what they're seeing in this particular genre, the messages, the worldview messages that they're seeing there. And do you think, though, that does map things out and develop that normativity so that by the time maybe we think in the church as youth workers and parents that now it's appropriate to have a conversation about sex and gender, my kids are old enough, those values, those beliefs have already been mapped so effectively and established as so normative, and of course affirmed by things beyond, you know, just a comic book world or the world of superhero films, so much so that, boy, maybe we've just taken that mapping perspective or understanding so lightly that we've really missed a chance to at ground level. Because Jason, you and I always say, you know, whoever has a conversation first owns it, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so I'm wondering about that. I just think that maybe that there is a you know, a type of catechetical, you know, or catechesis taking place with this. I know you agree with that at some level, but I just wanted to talk about
that. No, thank you so much for giving me an opportunity to kind of nuance this. You're right. So these movies are aimed from a sort of commercial aspect at a certain age category. But if we're honest, that age category is not the only people that are watching that. So I was in animation for a long time, in the animation industry for a long time. And the way that we categorize shows is, you know, this is kindergarten, this is preschool, this is preteen, this is teen, and so on and so forth. And we have these age categories. But informally, everybody in the industry knows that if you're targeting a show for 9 to 11-year-olds, really the people that are watching it are the 5 to 7-year-olds. It's that category right underneath them that this stuff is going to be most popular, because again, it does move culture forward. So yes, thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk about that. That is absolutely true. So in that sense, you have a map for the younger kids that are watching these things.
Yeah.
So, you know, and what parents, you're, you know, we got
to
be.
And what you're talking about there, this is, again, is a phenomenon that people need to be aware of called age aspiration, where kids aspire up. You know, they're going to look for things that make them feel older, seem older, be perceived as older than they actually are.
Yeah. And so sorry, Clark, you can go.
I'm just thinking, as I was just add into this conversation on the sexuality side, we are seeing a new trend of comics and the MCU and comic book superhero lore following the same trend of reflecting a non-heteronormative sexuality, non-conforming sexuality. But I would also just, you know, as much as we see this and we're like, oh my gosh, like from a conservative Christian background, we kind of freak out, right? Like, we need to have a tighter rein over how we watch things. Well, I would just kind of pull back and maybe remind us too that sexualization has always been there in media and especially in the comic world. We had a whole episode on this on our podcast too about sexualization of females in comics. Mm-hmm. That was super popular. I mean, if you read any of the comics from especially like the 90s, it was very much playing into this, like, you know, balloon-chested women, scantily clad outfits. It was just a heteronormative sexualization, so it wasn't given as much attention. And especially like even Tony Stark, who's known before he's Iron Man as this philanthropist playboy, that self-proclaimed playboy that he says himself. And so I think it's just a reminder that we have to have the same sort of attentiveness and assertiveness in how we think about how these mediums are shaping our view of sexuality. It's just more apparent now because it's not what's normative for us from a conservative background, but I think it's good to even pause and go back and question how we've allowed certain things to seep into our media watching just because they were quote unquote normative. And unfortunately that had also its own detriment to the shaping of young minds.
Mm. Yeah. And as a youth pastor, I mean, I'm looking at, how can I partner with parents to help teach kids about biblical sexuality. And Jason, I'm so thankful for the series that you and Preston just released about Christian sexuality. And I've been talking about that, that new curriculum and video series with the other pastors and staff members at my church to get the green light to figure out how are we gonna work that through with students. And one of the main questions is, well, who do we use that series with? And I'm trying to argue, I think we need to go through it with, maybe in a modified way, but with our middle schoolers too. And everyone's like, I'm really uncomfortable with that. I'm like, look, this is when kids are having these conversations. We're not telling them anything that they don't hear their friends talking and asking about, but it's awkward and difficult to discuss. But if we're not willing to engage in those conversations during their middle school years, then we're always playing catch up.
Yeah. You know, you're bringing up something too, and I appreciate how we're breaking this down. There is something I was thinking about, Kevin. I know our time is limited, so it's maybe more a statement than it is a question, but you had mentioned how it's not necessarily, it's reflective, but it's not necessarily the map. It's not leading. I don't know. Since you've said that, I've gone back and forth in my head, and I go back to when Black Panther was introduced, and there was something that was both inspiring and important and reflective, but it was also leading in many ways. Like it was a genre comics that was leading the way and helping shape some of the conversation around race in our country, and Marvel introduced that. Stan Lee was one of these individuals that actually helped propel some of those conversations. And I sometimes wonder if the same thing is happening now, even with sexuality. Even though they might not be leading, I'm sometimes wondering if the reflection that's occurring is actually, and although they're not leading the charge, they're the ones that are taking it to the next step. And the thing that I sometimes think about is, how will this affect the conversation in 3 years for those? I mean, the MCU is changing. And I've said this for many years, and I think that we've got to continue to realize this, is that if it's changing and we're going to see more of these characters, these conversations are going to become more and more important. And so our ability to engage them now is going to help in the years to come, because I do think it will influence this conversation in many years, because it's become it will become even more normal, if that is the word that we're using. Because I think that it's a reflection of society, but it propels that reflection, if that makes any sense. And I don't know if we have any pushback, but I just thought about that and I was like, yeah, I would agree, but I also do think that it is going to propel this conversation and the reality of what we find around really all these narratives in a way that I don't know. I just think it tells the future in ways that we don't always anticipate.
Yeah,
and I would see like Marvel has this huge stage that they're now giving a platform to these stories for. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, sometimes I think you can think of this two ways, that culture is downstream from the comic world that we're talking about here. And the comic world is also downstream from the culture. So there's that sense that we need to be really aware of that. I know we've reached the end of our time. There's so much more I'd love to talk about. And I know we're going to have you guys back on again, because Chris and I have been highly entertained by just listening to and watching the four of you go back and forth. And I know people can get more of Clark and Mike and Kevin and their arguments about and discussions about things that matter, right? So tell us again how to find your podcast, and we will include a link to that along with everything else on the page that we have right underneath the player for this at cpyu.org. So just remind us of the podcast.
Yeah, it's Thanos to Theos, and we'd love for you guys to check us out. We're based out of the Rooted Ministry, so you can find us on rootedministry.org. We have our episodes put up there, but they're on any platform. And also we do have social media accounts, Thanos to Theos at, for Twitter and Instagram, and also Gmail. So if anyone wants to get in touch with us, that's one easy way to do so.
Yeah. How often does the podcast come out? Are you guys on a regular schedule, or pardon my ignorance? Oh, they're laughing. I put them on the spot now. sounds like you need to go.
Kevin can answer for us.
Sounds like you need
to
record.
As regular as we can be.
Okay, that's good.
I remember
my grandfather saying that.
more fiber.
Yeah. So, you know, I really appreciate you guys. And you know, one of the things I'm going to take away from this is that, you know, that world is not really benign in terms of ideas. You know, you have helped us really understand that. And I think the message for those of us who maybe aren't as familiar with that world and the outlets and the different characters in there and the messages that come out, that this is a place where if our kids are there, I'll go back to what we say all the time here at CPYU, if you're a youth worker or a parent, read what they read, watch what they watch, listen to what they listen to. And the only way we find that out is if we ask and have an open avenue of relationships, and then spend some time, you know, again, watching, listening, reading, and then talking about what you see, asking questions. You know, that's one of the things that I came into this today a little bit. I felt a bit handcuffed because I had no clue other than just a little bit of time I spent yesterday trying to come up with, you know, snarky questions for you guys and ways to make fun of Mike and his love for New England sports. But, you know, this is a big deal, and you're right. So I really appreciate it. Jason, I love your input on this, and to see you get excited was that was worth what I paid to be on this today. So that was good. Yeah. Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Anything for the good of the order, guys? Any final words you want to leave with people here before we sign off?
Yeah. I just want to make one resource recommendation.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
A book by Todd Miles, who's a theology professor. wrote this book called Superheroes Can't Save You, Epic Examples of Historic Heresies. I can't speak anymore.
Yeah.
But yeah, Superheroes Can't Save You. And he uses different superheroes as examples of Christological heresies. So for example, Batman, you know, is a human, but he acts like a god because he's the perfection of humanity. And that type of savior can't save you. And Superman seems like a human, but he's not. He's actually, you know, being from another planet. And, you know, that's obviously a Christological heresy because Jesus was fully God, fully man. And so he uses different superheroes to teach about Christology. And I find that to be a really helpful resource for youth workers to kind of have in their back pocket.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Well, I appreciate you guys very much. And to me, you are exemplary in your commitment to know theology, to teach good biblical theology, and to really be in tune with the culture as well. So keep it up, and we will direct people to your podcast. Well, thank you, everybody, for listening, and we will chat with you again. Jason, do you want to say something?
Yes. Oh, no, I was just going to say bye to Yeor and to the Flater and to Smarticus.
Yes, yeah, Smarticus. I love that.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, and thank you. You know, Bartman, great to have you out of the left field stands and on the podcast.
Another World Series.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. That's awesome. Great. And by the way, we're going to sign off here very quickly because none of you to this point have had any notion at all about giving me a superhero name. We are done.
Thanks for joining us for Youth Culture Matters, a podcast from the Center for Parent Youth Understanding. If you'd like to learn more about today's youth culture, visit our website at cpyu.org. And if you have any questions, comments, or feedback, email us at podcast@cpyu.org.